brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Prep Radio, on time, on target. I'm excited to have Michael Crosby on, who goes by Bing Crosby, I guess, like the famous Bing Crosby. Michael Bing Crosby, retired naval commander and now founder and CEO of Veterans Prostate Cancer Awareness. And we'll get into his story and actually what they're doing over there. Before we do, actually, I think the first thing to get into here would be I've been following what's going on Twitter.
Why do you follow anything on Twitter? Just stop.
I follow what you're up to. And I did originally see a few days ago that Bagram Babe on Twitter. What did she say originally happened in Bagram?
Yeah, so, well, you got to understand this is like one of those like anonymous Twitter accounts, basically posting like woke tweets all the time. And one of many people out there who claimed to work for the military or she claimed to be a contractor working for like JSOC or some shit down at Fort Bragg. She'd post these like ridiculous over the top stories that are like, here's a little anecdote from work today, you know? And it's like clearly bullshit to me, but I mean, there are all these people just lapping it up, just like retweeting it. And a lot of them are national security, quote unquote, NatSec Twitter, those people are worthless anyway. But,
The latest one that I saw from you though, that you responded to, was her saying someone spit in her face or something.
Yeah, it was a story about how she claimed she was deployed to Afghanistan and she overheard a man talking to his wife and he thought he was safe, but he wasn't because she speaks Pashto. And he heard this Afghan man threatening this woman and she got right up in his face and told him who's boss. So the guy spit in her face. Allegedly. And then she went to the wife and was like, you know, do you want me to call the police? You need to be safe. And the whole story was obviously bullshit. I mean, she's saying that she like SJW'd Afghanistan and was like trying to create a safe space for battered women in Afghanistan as a SOCOM or JSOC contractor. It's like, this is bullshit. Like, this never fucking happened. And I posted on there. I was like, this sounds like total fiction. And she got back to me. She's like, it's 100% true. And then she started DMing me, you know, sending me messages on there. Like, it happened. That's real. And she had came like way back when she first created that account. She was sending me direct messages on Twitter. And she was very flirty, asking me for like restaurant recommendations in New York City. I haven't been in the city in so long. Do you know a good Mexican restaurant in New York City? And I was like listening to this bullshit. And I was like, you know what she's trying to do? Assuming it's even a woman.
Sounds legit.
She's trying to pull like a John Schindler. Like, you remember the, I think he was an NSA guy and he got caught sending dick pics. And I was like, you know what? That's what she's trying to do. She's trying to like flirt with guys who are kind of more or less around the national security world. And I'm sure she's like going to try to get them to send dick pics and then blackmail the shit out of them. So I was like, what I did was I tried to get her to divulge classified information like right away. Because I was like, that'll put her on her heels, you know, if she's legit. And if not, she's going to go away. But anyway, when she came back to me after I called bullshit on her Twitter nonsense, she got back to me and she claiming it was all true. And I was like, hey, because she claims on her Twitter that she has a master's degree in military strategy. And I was like, where do you get your master's degree? And she was like, oh, I went to Georgetown School of Foreign Service. I was like, huh. You go and you look at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown, they don't offer a military strategy concentration. And she also claims she speaks Pashto. They don't teach that at Georgetown, so where'd she pick that up from? She claims that she got her bachelor's degree at the University of Haifa. So all this bullshit. And I mean, it was just like that all the time. Her posting these stories, this flirty bullshit. But these dudes like just lap it up, and God knows. I mean, I shudder to think of how many legitimate people she probably compromised behind the scenes, because these like sad dudes, or BK, he was these guys are so thirsty. They're so thirsty. And he's right. They are. So anyway, there's this former Marine, Justin, and it looks like former Special Forces guy. They went and like did all the background research on her and connected all the dots and exposed her. She's really a fucking hairdresser from New Jersey, 22 years old, has no background in national security, anything. And I mean, just the fact that you had all of these like woke Twitter accounts, like retweeting her shit on a daily basis. I mean, it just shows you how fucking, not just dumb, but just bankrupt the entire deal is, the entire movement. And national security Twitter is just such a circle jerk of stuff like this.
So what happened though is she's off Twitter.
Yeah, she closed down her account once they confronted her and was like, look, we know who you are. You know, and I know what her real name is. I don't know that I'm really going to like blast it out there quite yet. I actually sent her an email yesterday because I have her actual resume now, that shows that she's in fashion and she's what she really is. So I sent her an email.
Real pictures?
I have some real pictures. Yeah.
Attractive?
Not really. far be it for me to comment on a young lady's looks.
Sure. I'm just curious.
The profile picture on her Twitter is a picture of Jessica Simpson, who made
the singer.
Yeah, okay. She did a movie apparently where she's like a soldier in the army, girl power.
And no one was able to vet that. I mean, that's got to be a pretty easy.
I don't
one.
Know. Some people probably knew. Other people probably like. You know, the thirsty bros, I mean, they just take it, all of it at face value. Like, yeah. Oh my God, she works at JSOC. She's so hot. Oh my God, I got to know her. You know, but there are others out there. I mean, look, Twitter is a fucking shithole. Woke Twitter is even worse. Woke veteran Twitter, which we did a whole podcast on, mm-hmm. That shit is just the equivalent of like a prostate exam, which we'll talk about later on the show.
Nice segue there.
Or a IRS tax audit. But anonymous woke veteran Twitter is just the dregs. It's the absolute worst. It's just people posting total bullshit. Just like I saw one the other day. I was just laughing at this with a friend of mine. One of these anonymous woke veteran accounts. And he's like, today I was at brunch and I could not believe it. There were these college guys and they were all talking about their hangovers and all the girls that they had sex with the night before. But then sitting next to me was also a group of college girls and they were talking about sustainable energy and how to protect the environment. We just need to put girls in charge right now. And it's like, this never happened. That's not a real story. You were not really at brunch and this shit happened. No. It's all bullshit.
It's possible, but it's still an anecdotal, you know, whatever. I mean,
like you're trying to check all the woke tick marks for Twitter in one post. It's like, dude, you're fucking, it's so ham-handed. You're hot dogging it so bad. And it's just perfectly obvious to anyone who has two IQ points to rub together. Like you're just making shit up.
Yeah.
Like you're just making it up. So, I mean, like I said, I mean, I wasn't trying to make fun of you when I said, why are you following anything on Twitter? Yeah. But I mean, really, I mean,
as you know, I'm also not one of these people who's tweeting day and night. I mean, I go on there, I see what's going on. I see what you're up to.
Well, so no. You're also not on there like milking it for likes, no. Little hearts
My
every
last
day. You know,
tweet was
I
about
understand.
That John Jones is back, going to be fighting again this year. That's the shit I care about. I'm not seeing what woke vets are up to. Which, by the way, that would be cool if we ever had him as a guest. I couldn't imagine Jim West interviewing John Jones. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
But yeah.
But that's the deal with Bagram Babe. And I mean, so
she's done.
Yeah, she's done. Yeah, she has been canceled, so to speak. So, but I mean, the point with that.
I wonder if she's legit, you know, in fear or anything, because now if you've been exposed, people know who you are. There probably are, as you said, guys who sent like unsolicited stuff that are now like, fuck, this isn't.
And
there are
probably bros who actually did divulge classified information to her. I mean, that would not surprise me in the least. And the weird thing about her is that this is like, on one hand, it was very amateurish and very sloppy how she went about it. Like, you don't claim to speak Pashto when you can't speak Pashto, because, I mean, somebody
easily
who does,
can be called out on it.
Right, you can easily be called out on it. So you don't do stupid stuff like that. But on the other hand, she had other stuff that was backstopped, like going back 3 years. Like, this was something she planned out very well. She was trying to pretend that she was a general's daughter. And she had things in her name going back years with the last name Votel, which is not her last name. The name Votel is a former CENTCOM commander. He was actually my commander, General Joe Votel.
Yeah, I've heard you speak on him.
Yeah, General Joe Votel. Back when he was Colonel Votel, he was the regimental commander of the 75th Ranger Regiment. And I remember sitting with him next to him before a parachute jump. I was in RIP. I was the youngest, most junior guy ever, and he was the most senior guy in the regiment. And he was just sitting there talking to me, asking me some questions. You know, what do you think of the course? Yeah. You know, are you getting some good training out of it? Seems like a really nice guy. But anyway, this woman, Bagram Babe, was posing as his daughter, which is just adds another element of surrealism.
And
to
you
this.
Could have probably called him up. I don't know if you still have that contact. And
I mean, I haven't talked to him since I was in the military. But I mean, I guess you could. But other people who know him quite well are like, well, General Votel doesn't have a daughter. He has a couple sons, but he doesn't have a daughter. Yeah. And he doesn't have an adopted daughter. So the whole story is bullshit from the get-go. But I mean, I think the main point with Bagram Babe that I'd like listeners and people to be aware of is, she is not an isolated incident. Like,
no, we've seen others with you too.
How many other accounts just like this are out there? How many people telling these, you know, fake ass stories on Twitter, pretending they're involved in national security, and how many bros are sending them dick pics and divulging classified information? But it's like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, really. I mean, you get a cute girl picture, you post some shit up there, and I mean, dudes, the thirsty bros are going to be all over it, telling them God knows what. I mean, Jesus Christ, if you're going to compromise national security, at least sleep with the girl first. I mean, and whisper over pillow talk. Yeah. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to work, right? When you compromise someone, you're just telling them stuff over Twitter. I mean, at that point, you're just too dumb to live, you know? Shoot yourself, for Christ's sake.
No, I had to get into that with you, though. That's crazy. It's good when people like that are exposed, and I'm sure there'll be more of it.
It's like I had the Russians try to compromise me years ago, sending me emails pretending to be a woman named Natalie working for Interpol. And I had someone trace her email back, and it went right back to St. Petersburg, Russia. And I was like, okay, you know, a strong attempt. I respect that. But you know, if you're serious, Russia, like, you're going to pony up a real Natalie.
Like, you even said at SHOT Show, you've seen like Chinese spies, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Definitely. What was that girl's name? Summer. I wrote about Summer and I wrote about Natalie. I wrote about both of those, incidents, because it's like one of those things like, look, these are just some little things I've run into in life. Like, if you are an FBI agent or you are, you know, I'd like to think people in the CIA know better, but if you work somewhere in national security or somewhere in our government, you should be aware that this shit is out there. I mean, it's real. There are these provocateurs and there are these women out there who will try to compromise you. But I mean, if you're going to try to do that to me, can you pony up a real Natalie? Like, I want high-end call girls knocking on my door. If you want me to compromise my country and be a traitor, I mean, come on, guys. Like, put some effort into this. I'm not going to just, like, fucking bang out state secrets on Twitter for you. Come on, man.
Yeah. That's funny shit, though. I thought it was, you know, because I saw the original tweet and then you were like, and all of a sudden these tweets are deleted. This woman is no longer on
all
Twitter.
All of a sudden, so. four days later, after I called bullshit on her, yep, her account's deleted.
Well, I want to get to Mike. There's other stuff I wanted to talk about here in this intro, but we can get to it later. We have a great listener email. I want to talk about Russia putting out what they call more evidence behind the story of the Malaysian Airlines flight MH17. Mike Pence today at the Korean War Veterans Memorial flag presentation. We can get into that. But since Mike is standing by, let's get over to Mike. So joining us for the first time on Soft Rep Radio, Michael Bing Crosby, retired naval commander and now founder and CEO of Veterans Prostate Cancer Awareness, also a prostate cancer survivor himself, which we'll get into. I definitely want to get into your naval background, but I think the nickname is the first thing. I mean, I guess it's obvious, like Bing Crosby, right?
That's right. It's kind of like Animal House. In the 1980s, I showed up on the Nimitz and walked into the ready room, and the commanding officer handed me a name tag and basically said, "You are Bing." And that's it could have been a lot worse. So I didn't argue or didn't say a word. And I quickly stepped out of the ready room and went to work.
And I guess you've gone by it ever since. I mean, I'm sure, like, at the time, a very relevant reference. I mean, Bing Crosby at the time was like one of the major celebrities. So before we get into your story of prostate cancer and prostate cancer survival, starting this organization, I'd love to hear about your time as a naval commander.
I left left Oklahoma in 1978, enlisted actually initially, and as I'd tried to get into the service academies and didn't quite have the grades to do that. But I enlisted, actually ended up at prep school in Newport, Rhode Island, and then was accepted to the Naval Academy and graduated in 1983. So we're coming up on our wonderful 35th year anniversary, which is we're all looking forward to next month in Annapolis.
Congrats.
Yeah, thanks. And then from there, I went to Pensacola, became a naval flight officer and flew in the F-14 Tomcat. Actually, was based in Oceana, Virginia. Initially went to Point Mugu, California at VX-4, one of the operational test squadrons, and then back to Oceana. Deployed into Desert Storm, so served there. Then actually went back to Saudi, you know, the whole career thing. I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East. I then left or went back to Miramar. Served at went to the reserves, went to VF-301, and stayed there. Then I was selected for command of a mobile operation command center up at Point Mugu in the Navy Reserves. And then a 9/11 happened. I was actually recalled to active duty twice. Wow. Once as a CO of the mobile operation command center, and then second down at Central Command. Some wonderful classmates saw my name on the list and they pulled me back into active duty. So I did another round about a year and a half at CENTCOM. And then I retired from there as the chief of counterproliferation. So working on things I'd never thought I would do, but, managing guys that, were out looking at border control issues and proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, that sort of thing. So it was great experience. I love it dearly. I'd go back tomorrow night if they'd allow me. So anyway, no regrets, and really enjoyed my time in active duty and in the Navy. It was, highly encourage it to anybody that's starting out now. It's, it's the best career that you could ever, it still speak highly to anybody, any school, any young kid trying to find his way. It's just join the military and we'll show you the way. Right.
That's awesome. It sounds like you got to do like a pretty wide variety of things, from flying to being in charge of, WMD counterproliferation.
I did. It was a very varied career. And it was, so I did get to experience a whole host of different things. So, which I think a lot of people, and I know you guys and you're looking at your histories and stuff too, is that there are so many things that the military actually does or participates in that a lot of people don't even realize.
Yeah.
It's everything from, assisting foreign countries in how they do their own security. So security assessments and security assistance, to even, you look at the recent floods and things with Florence, you've got, the Marines out in the amphibious vehicles picking up guys and driving through the streets and with the specialized equipment that we have now to actually save lives and rescue dogs and whatever else is required, right?
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand, like, you can go and do something like be a firefighter on an aircraft carrier or something. There are all these jobs out there other than, being a paratrooper or a fighter pilot.
Yeah, exactly. No, and it is a very – it's like a whole, its own little society. It has to maintain everything from accounting, you know, the financial guys to the frontline guys, you know, carrying the you know, pointy sticks and that kind of stuff.
So I think that, you know, your story is very interesting in the sense that just yesterday, actually, I was having lunch with a friend of mine, and he's in his 60s now. He's having some health issues, and the VA would be very conservative. And I think you can see that in your story also. It's like, oh, come back in 6 months.
Yeah.
Come back then. And it's like, and as my friend was telling me over lunch yesterday, he's like, when they do that, guys are dying in the meantime.
Yeah. There's the VA in two things about before I'll caveat or I'll kind of start this off with.
Sure.
There are some really great things about the VA. Mm-hmm. I mean, the services that the VA, that the Veterans Administration offers and that they put out there, a lot of people don't realize that there's really three portions of the VA, right? There's the one that you always hear about in the press, and that's the VA healthcare system.
Yep.
And then there's the VA benefits, which handle all of your school loans and the GI Bill issues and all of those, you know, the retirement type of issues, that sort of all the financial aspects of those benefits that people deserve from their service in the military. And then there's the National Cemetery side of things. So that's, you know, everything from Arlington Cemetery to every state has a National Cemetery, and that's all managed within the Veterans Administration as well. So pretty, those are sort of the three pockets of monies that they spend into. Clearly, the healthcare is the one that is under the microscope at the moment, right? It's the one that, unfortunately, has had some really bad actors, in my opinion, and some really poor management and really in certain areas. There are some VAs that are spectacular. My brother-in-law was a Vietnam vet down in Atlanta, and he goes to his local VA and absolutely loves him. I mean, has never had bad care, has been you know, treated like a king, and really gets some of the best care that you can imagine. I was at the Phoenix VA in 2014, and actually before that as well. And I really don't think that it's a system issue. I think it's almost a localized personnel issue. Mm-hmm. And it's bad people or bad managers and people that just put priorities in the wrong place is what's happened in the VA. And the VA, some days I tell them that they're trying to take on too much, right? They are not equipped, nor are they financed or trained to be the cancer care and cancer research center for mm-hmm. the United States. I mean, the VA started off with a mission of rehabilitating guys that have come back from combat and rehabilitating them and integrating them back into society and taking care of those. We still see that out of the longest war we've ever served in. It's still going on. And we still have guys coming back, you know, missing limbs and, you know, with PTS and whatever else and other all sorts of other, you know, wartime affected issues. And that's really where the VA should focus. I mean, that's my personal opinion. I think the VA is great. I think they've invested incredible amounts of money in the mental health care, much more so proportionally than our own society has done. And I think that as a model, they're doing a pretty good job. They're actually standing up, and I think there's a lot of resources. If you make a phone call, whether it's to the suicide hotline or to just the mental health, you know, helpline, and you ask for, you know, to go see a therapist, you're there the same day if you want to. I mean, so from that perspective, from guys reaching out for help, which is sorely needed, it's there. The guy just has to make the call, or, you know, people like yourselves have to put the word out. You know, here's suicide hotline. We're losing 22 guys a day. Why? I mean, it's craziness what's going on, and we all need to reach out and help those guys that are struggling with that stuff. And so I think the VA is taking a strain, and I think they are doing a pretty good job in that respect. from prosthetics, right? They're probably one of the leading institutions in prosthetic research and design and assistance and rehabilitation. And that's been forced on them because of these protracted wars that we're in,
yep.
right? I mean, you know the experience. You know, there's more IEDs. There's more of these, crazy IEDs and other types of explosions and whatever that guys are having to deal with. And coming back, missing legs, missing eyes, whatever. And the VA has actually, unfortunately, become very good at that. And that's something maybe it's going to help society as a whole later on. I know the technology behind it is just incredible. Okay, so those are things that they should be experts in. Those are areas where the world should look at them and say, well, listen, this is technology, leading edge, cutting edge type of stuff that they're doing with those sorts of things. And then we get to cancer, right? The VA was never really supposed to be a geriatric care place, right? I mean, that's not what it really should be, right? And so but unfortunately, aging population, guys are living longer. And as you live longer, you end up contracting things like different cancers. The problem I see with the VA is that they're not equipped in comparison to private industry to actually offer the services that are available, to the public. And now as you hear, doesn't matter whether it's President Obama's administration or Trump's administration, everybody agrees that because you're a vet, you shouldn't have substandard care or you shouldn't be neglected from the care that's available to everybody else in the country, right? You shouldn't be at a disadvantage because you are a veteran. You should be at least equal, if not preferential treatment because you volunteered, especially today, you volunteered to go out and to serve your country. So we need something back from that. So that's the part of the deal is that I think that that's kind of where we're at from this cancer care perspective, right? Is that they don't, while they do service, they do treat, they do diagnose, the treatments that they're offering are not state of the art. They're not the most modern technology. Some of the medications that are coming out aren't available through the VA formulary. And so that's why myself, I'm a big proponent of the CHOICE program and the Mission Act, which was just signed. So I think that those are a couple of things that we need to put out that guys need to be aware of. And, I've got my own opinions on why it's not being promoted.
What exactly is the CHOICE program? Because I have heard of it before, but if you can give some background.
Okay. So the CHOICE program started in 2014. It was actually emergency funds that were passed by Bernie Sanders and John McCain. Two unlikely bedfellows got together and saw this you think about politics, right? These are opposite ends of the spectrum, right, that came together because of the Phoenix VA issue that was going on. Guys were dying in Phoenix because of wait time issues or mistreatment issues or whatever. And we can – that's a whole other radio show we can talk about. But so Bernie Sanders and John McCain sponsored a bill that allocated about $14 billion to community care. And they called it the CHOICE program. It was giving veterans a choice of whether to take the care inside the VA or to step outside to the community and not stand in line. Just go get your care. Go get something taken care of. If you have something wrong, go get it taken care of and the government will pay for it. Well, you can imagine with any large program, and this was a large program, there's going to be some issues with it, right? In administrating the administration of it and making sure guys are getting paid on time and that sort of thing. So it's gone on since 2014. So we're in it's about its fourth year. A lot of people have complained about it. They weren't getting paid and whatever. And I happened to help a lot of other agencies, actually companies, get engaged and get registered to be able to use this thing, because there's two sides to it. Choice has the both the provider side, which is the all the people in the community. They have to register and sign a contract with either the was initially health insurance companies, two of them that had been contracted to provide the services, or directly with the VA. And it's shifting now a little bit to directly with the VA. And as a provider, as a doctor, say a urologist or an oncologist or somebody in the community that wants to service a veteran, all they have to do is agree. They have to be in good standing with, you know, with the medical community and the agencies that that regulate that. And they have to sign a contract that they agree to Medicare reimbursement rates. Okay, so that they're going to get paid the same thing that a guy would get paid if he presented his Medicare rates. And that's a big deal because, you know, just in the whole medical community and our medical industry, somebody has to set limits on how much doctors can pay for medicine or you can charge for medicine or charge for their services, and that's what Medicare does.
I'm actually glad you clarified that, though, because when I first heard Choice Program, it's mainly a Republican idea I've heard, but of basically putting veterans into the private health care and you getting to choose, you know, from just the private health care
industry.
McCain
talked about that for a long time.
Yeah, and I think some even want to, like, abolish the VA and just have veterans in private health care. This is something different based on what you're describing.
No, I think that, and if you look back, there's been some recent advancements or recent legislation that's occurred that gets no press, right? I mean, nobody talks about it. And one is the signing of what's called the Mission Act. And the Mission Act was signed on June 6th by President Trump. I don't know the exact voting record, but I think it was completely bipartisan. I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of like 90 to 10 type of thing in the Senate, right? That that everybody voted for this act. And this act actually helps to stabilize the Choice program. They're going to rename it. It's going to sunset in June of next year is what the schedule is. And it's going to become called the Community Care Network, right? I mean, well, you know, the government and every, you know, military organization, you got to change the name when somebody else comes up with a better idea, right? So so it's going to be the Community Care Network is what it's called. It's now a permanent line item in the budget for the VA. So previous to this, when Sanders and McCain put it in place, it was temporary funding. So it had to be reauthorized every year. And so it had to, you know, almost be reintroduced every year as our funding bills work. Now, as of June 6th, Trump has signed it into law where it is a permanent piece of the VA's budget. Now, there's some tricky things inside that the law, you know, having watched it go through this process and helped promote it, they negotiated, some of the people negotiated, and you got to read the fine print. One of the issues that I don't like in the bill is that at the end of the year, every fiscal year, if the Choice money or if that Community Care Network funding is not 100% utilized, the VA can claw back that money and spend it on whatever they want to. Okay. So being a little bit jaundiced against the VA leadership a little bit, the reason I believe that they're not promoting the fact that this money is available for veterans to spend on their own health care is at the end of every year, they get to call, the management gets to claw back that money and spend it on whatever they want to.
Wow.
Okay. Okay, and we're not talking about, you know, $50 here. Yeah. We're talking about billions of dollars. Okay, so this, you know, the there's a debate on how much money is really out there, but it's close to a couple of billion dollars a year that's available for this outside care. Okay, and that's why our organization, why VPCA, is promoting veterans to sign up for this money, for this care or this service. And it's a misnomer. Okay. People will tell you now today, if you were to get out of the service today, you know, regardless of what you're, you know, what rank or whatever you are, there's a lot of misperception as to whether you qualify for VA benefits. The issue is if you have a DD-214 and you're honorably discharged, whether you served 2 years or you serve 22 years, you qualify for VA benefits. Okay. So when you put that out, that's the qualification. DD-214 and an honorable discharge. That's your qualification to get VA healthcare benefits, education benefits, you know, at different levels, all right? And, you know, National Cemetery burial benefits. So those are things that need to be clarified. It's pretty simple. Now, once you get that, though, you're not automatically signed up for the CHOICE program. Some people will tell you that you are, but you're not. If you have, you have to dial a phone number, right? You got to dial this phone number, or you have to ask your eligibility office when you sign up that I want to be in the CHOICE program. And you get a little separate card that has a separate number on it. That's almost like your insurance card. And if you, when you call and the VA can't take care of you, or that the timeline is too far out for them to see you, you ask, well, I'm in the CHOICE program. I'd like a referral, please. And they send you right out. It works great. I mean, I use it. I'm a user of this whole thing. And I would tell you to sign up as well, because some of the care that you get is now you have access to that state-of-the-art care that's out in our private healthcare communities. And so, and you don't have to wait. You can ask for the service and you can go use it. But as a veteran, you don't automatically get signed up for this. You know, here are some quick numbers, you know, for people out there. There's 22 million veterans in the United States. Okay, 9 million of them are under care at the VA. That's the largest integrated healthcare system on the planet. So there's no other healthcare system that's servicing that many people. That is one that's where your light should go off and say, okay, well, that makes it a bit of an issue, right? That's a big management challenge. So there's going to be problems, and we accept that. So from a prostate cancer perspective, 7 million of the 9 million are guys over the age of 40, right? So that's when you need to be starting your screening for prostate cancer. You need to do an annual screen. Okay, so regardless of what they say, there's new rules that have changed, or new recommendations have changed as of March of this year. Veterans are in a high-risk category because of your exposure to chemicals, weapons, you know, other kinds of, you know, radiation issues and whatever. We just know that – we don't know why specifically, but we know that veterans are at a higher risk of contracting prostate cancer and sort of other cancers as well. So right now, though, today – as we look at it, there's only 1 million veterans signed up in the CHOICE program.
That's okay, not a lot, you know, when you look at the big picture, for sure.
Right. So we're trying, our market, or one of our goals is to get the other 8 million guys and girls out there signed up in this program. Because as any program, the more people that are signed up using it and liking it, the more success that program's going to have.
And, right? And as you kind of hinted at before, the less that these people at the top get to waste this money that's allocated for the program.
Absolutely. I mean, and this is 1 year money. So let's talk about, you know, government, you know, monies out there. This is 1 year money. At the end of the year, that money either dissolves and it doesn't carry over into the next year. So they don't get to keep building up a pot of this money. Right. So
it's like incentive for them not to get veterans signed up for this.
Correct. Absolutely. So they can either go, you know, build another clinic, or they can pay their bonuses, or they can do whatever they want to do. Right. So it's and this money, typically, you guys know this in the government, you get monies allocated for equipment, you get for building facilities or for operating, you know, OPTAR and operating expenses and that sort of thing. So under our government's rules, the whole budget that goes out there for the Defense Department or for the VA, there's different pots of money or different colors of money. This money that's been allocated by Congress has no color to it, so they can spend it on whatever they want to spend it on. So this is really valuable money to the management of the VA.
Could you tell us a little bit about your own story, your own experience with prostate cancer?
Yeah.
Because I think that kind of leads into why something like the CHOICE program is so important.
Sure. I had been going to the VA since 2010. I left the military in 2009, and I'd signed up for the VA, one, because I wanted to, and I always volunteered at the VA and try to go over one weekend a month and help either push guys around. And it was great for me to listen to good World War II stories or, you know, good Vietnam stories and that sort of thing. Right. So it was beneficial on both parts. Right. So I always did my annual physical there. I kept my medical records there and always did sort of the annual flight physical and knew about prostate cancer a little bit or as my health side of things. So I always demanded that I got a PSA test because, which is your prostate specific antigen blood test and a digital rectal exam, which is that's your annual physical. That's your annual test that you need to be doing. Everybody needs to be doing it that's been a veteran. And you need to know those numbers. You don't just need to take the word of the doctor or the nurse that everything's okay, right? And I learned that sort of the hard way in that I'd always had my PSA levels had always been around 2.5, 2.6, something like that, which is pretty low in the number scale of things. And I'd been working overseas, so I was in Phoenix where my wife and I were living, and I had gone to the Phoenix VA. I did my physical and, you know, I had to run out and go back to work, so I left. Actually flew back to Southeast Asia and called in for the results. Like we do sometimes. You call in, you're like, okay, that nothing's ready the day that you get your test, right? So you call in and the nurse said on the phone, yeah, everything's okay. Take your statins and you'll be fine. That was 2014. 2015, I came back for my physical and my PSA was at 14.7, which is extremely high. So essentially the last I had heard it was at 2.5 and it had gone to 14.7. Well, the year before, as we look back in the records, it was actually 5.7, which there is a standard out there right now in the industry that if it's above 4 or it's rising rapidly, they tell you to go get or they'll refer you to get a biopsy because from your PSA rise or from, you know, your DRE, you can't determine that you have cancer. It's an indicator, but it does not tell you that you have cancer. You have to have a biopsy, and the pathologist has to look at the tissue under the microscopes and see and determine if you do have cancer. Right now, that's the only technology. It's the only thing we have today to make that determination. Yes, there's programs working on new technologies, but they're not available right now. So when I heard that, I said, well, this is great. Okay, so at least somebody's found it and I'm aware of it. So I said, well, what's the next step? We need to go to a urologist at the VA. Well, the urology department is the one at the VA in Phoenix that had all the problems in the past. And at that time, this was 2015, the issues were still ongoing. So I got into this. Well, they can't see you for 29 days, the whole scheduling nonsense. I'm kind of a forceful guy, and I said, that's unacceptable. I'll just walk up there and make my own appointment. So I walked into the department, told them they're going to see me, and they did. Got in to see the urologist. You know, lo and behold, there were 3 open appointments right there and then. And so obviously the internal IT system and scheduling system wasn't working so well. And I asked this urologist and did an exam with him, and he looked at the stuff and said, well, why don't you come back in 6 months and we'll just do another PSA, because the only thing that we can offer you here at the VA in Phoenix is surgery. There's what's called a radical prostatectomy. Now, a radical prostatectomy is where they do a surgery and they remove your prostate. Okay. And there's a lot of problems with doing that. There's the problem with doing this is, first, it's an archaic procedure because these guys in the VA are still doing it with a scalpel and Damn. Not with robotic surgery or with state-of-the-art type of technology that's available. Okay. So I elected not to do that. This is where, had the choice program been in place, I would have asked immediately for a referral out. But I was lucky enough to have my own healthcare, my own outside health insurance, and I also had knowledge of kind of where to go. So I stepped out, made a few phone calls, and instead of waiting 6 months for another exam and a biopsy, I was on the phone with a radiation oncologist, Sandy Vermeulen, up at who's from Seattle, Washington, We're related by marriage. And so she said, you know, your numbers and your situation right now dictates that you get a biopsy today, not 6 months from now. And lo and behold, they scheduled me for a – she called a friend. It's sort of the network, right? So she called a friend in Phoenix. I went over to Banner Health and did a biopsy, and lo and behold, turned out that it was positive for cancer. I had what's called a Gleason score, which is the level of scoring that they use to determine sort of your stage of cancer that you have. And I had a Gleason 7 with 4+3, which is right on the verge of being what's called metastatic or non-metastatic. Metastatic means it's spread to your other parts of your body. Mine was at the level where it was right on that verge of spreading, and I, but it hadn't, luckily, knock on wood. And I called Sandy and said, here's the results. What do you want me to do? She said, come to Seattle right now and we'll treat you. Here's a new treatment. It's not really new. It was been around about 8 years. It's called CyberKnife, which is it's a radiation oncology type of a treatment, which is 5 treatments, high-intensity radiation, extremely accurate. They put 4 fiducial markers inside your prostate, and they actually track it in real time. So then they're able to apply this high-dose radiation to your prostate. It's non-invasive, and they're using modern, you know, sort of target tracking algorithms, which they're and it actually – your prostate moves and while you're on the table, while you're being treated, right? So this machine then allows the tracking device to track your prostate and apply the radiation to an accuracy of less than a millimeter, which is the most accurate treatment that's out there today. I mean, bar none, nobody else can compare to it. So I elected to take that treatment, and that was 3 years ago. One of the problems that everybody fears in prostate cancer treatment is the side effects. Traditionally, with the old treatments, you have to deal with either incontinence, erectile dysfunction, or both. And that is the fear that most men have when you start talking about prostate cancer. And it's when we start talking about those functions that men have between your knees and your belly button. You know, it sort of immediately, unfortunately, we're the weaker gender, and it affects our brain. Seems like our brains, you know, attached to those yes. nether regions, and our ego gets involved, and we don't want to address those issues, right? We want to think that we're stronger than the cancer and that we just can avoid it and ignore it and we'll all be okay. Well,
not a good strategy.
Yeah, right. Your wife will tell you that it's not a good strategy, right? And so this treatment was spectacular. It was no problem. And again, knock on wood today, there's still no side effects. And I have a 3-year checkup coming up in 2 months, and we'll see what happens.
That's great.
But yeah. And so that everybody knows, the VA does not have this capability. They don't, they can't treat you with CyberKnife. They've recently bought 2 of them. There's been 1 in Houston. So the radiation oncology departments understand what it does, and they've endorsed the technology by buying a couple of them. One's going to go into Houston or into Dallas, and one is going to go to Tampa. Now, you have to imagine, though, that these are pretty advanced devices, right? Advanced technology. And so now the radiation oncology departments are going to have to learn how to use these things. So we're talking about a few years of evolution before it's going to be, you know, really prevalent within inside the VA, right? So there's about 180 of these devices in the United States. And this is just one of the technologies that are out there. There's robotic surgery that urologists are using. That's called a Da Vinci machine, which really it's robotic surgery. It's very high end. It's you know, quasi non-invasive, but you still have to go through the surgery and stay in the hospital a couple of days. With the CyberKnife treatment, I walked in. It was 5-day treatment, 1 hour a day, and left and walked away. Wow. Nothing else, right? So you'd go and listen to music for about an hour a day and walk out. And every day you go back to work, you do whatever, totally non-invasive.
Wow.
Okay. And so it's one of those things where highly recommended. And this is sort of this difference of state of the art, right? So you got the VA, which is still pushing scalpels around through people. And you've got outside society that's doing 5 1-hour treatments and nobody, it's non-invasive. Nobody even touches you. Right. And so that's the level of difference that we're talking about. And so when we come back to, the services and the offerings of the Veterans Administration, they're great in certain areas. In other areas, they're unable. There's not enough money in our national budget to actually bring the VA system up to par with the state or the standard of care that's available in private community, in the private industry, because it's accelerated and technology advancements have accelerated so fast that it's unable to keep up. I mean, our acquisition system is partly to blame, because it takes us years to actually evaluate requirements, build the machines, test the airplanes, and then put them into service and train guys how to operate them. Well, the same thing happens in any government institution in the United States. Acquisition reform has not caught up. So a lot of things touch, a lot of big issues touch the VA and our concerns and how it operates.
New
right?
equipment so, acquisitions is not our strong point in the military. Sounds like, that's bled over to VA as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you guys experience it, and everybody from using any kind of weapon system, whether it's a new rifle, to new airplanes, right? I mean, how long did it take to get the Joint Strike Fighter into service? I wonder, 16 years or something like that? It just is incredible, right? So same thing happens. And so when you're talking about healthcare and advances in healthcare and treatment options, it's clear and safe to say that the VA does not have state-of-the-art cancer care technology. Mm-hmm. It's just, and it's not a bad mark about the VA, but it's something I think that we need to realize is that, and really our organization is trying to educate two sides of this industry. One is the users or the veterans themselves, that you have options. Should you need to go get screened, first of all. You need to know about your health, and that's part of the education and awareness mission that we're putting out there. Is that the guys have to become aware and they need to be educated on what the standards are and what your health care is all about. Right. Yeah. And what is a prostate, first of all? Why do you need to pay attention to it? And why are you at risk? That's one of the missions. The second is that you have options should you be diagnosed with this disease, right? You have options other than the archaic, what I would call archaic treatment options that are given to you inside the VA. Don't just always accept what they say. Go get a second opinion. And go get a second opinion outside the VA. Go to another doctor and see what they say. And then when that happens, you have to know that you can access the CHOICE program or community care network and choose the right treatment for you.
Yeah.
Right. And in consultation with your doctors, choose the right treatment, because everybody has different views on how they want to be treated. CyberKnife may not be the right one for you. Maybe you want to do Da Vinci surgery and just get it taken out. That's okay. But if you're going to go down that route, know what the standard of care is and know what your options are and how you're going to get it paid for. And so those are really – that's – our organization's mission, as we've written it up, is to really educate both veterans and providers that this program is available and that it's all about making the right choice. Right? And it's about knowing your options, like we're always trained in the military, right? From day one, know all of your options. Know what you can do and what's available to you and what resources you have. And then apply them in the most efficient way to accomplish the mission, right?
I'm really glad we could have you on today to talk about this, because I wasn't even aware of the CHOICE program, never really even would have thought of it. And, you know, just to reiterate, you know, I don't have any service-connected disability or rating or anything like that. But, you know, as you said, I'm still eligible for VA healthcare, and I have a VA ID card on my wallet. And, you know, a lot of other young veterans out there who are listening to this, you know, you should probably do yourself a favor and go and get registered, you know, at VA and get the ID card, because you are eligible for care, even if you don't need it right now.
That's right. And go get signed up. It's just, it's another card that you have to add to your wallet, right? And it's a, you get another number, it's another member ID, that's the CHOICE card, right? And I'm sure it's going to change over to Community Care Network and that sort of thing, but you've got to get into the program.
Yeah.
And I mean, and there's a great website, and it's on, the number is on our website as well at vetsprostate.org. But you can just Google, just search for CHOICE program, VA CHOICE program. You'll get a 1-866 number that comes up, and dial that number and tell them you want to register for the CHOICE card. And the more people we get out there doing this sort of thing, the stronger it's going to make the program. And really, I mean, it just gives you more options in your healthcare. And you're just like you, for example, right? You go to the VA, or if you're registered with the VA, you go get your annual checkup, any kind of problems. Like I use the CHOICE program for next week. I'm going to a dermatology appointment because the VA couldn't see me, right? I've used it for physical therapy. I've used it for all sorts of different things that are out there that have nothing to do with cancer care or anything else. It's just the VA can't see everybody that's out there. They don't have the capability. And this is what this money was allocated for. So it's a benefit. It's a great service. And it also helps, I think, integrate veterans into the community and the community into the veterans population as well. A lot of doctors want to provide that service to vets, but they just don't know how. So as you meet doctors and you meet the medical community, encourage them to go onto the provider side of the CHOICE program and sign up as a provider.
Yeah. So I think it's an important message to get signed up for CHOICE if you're a veteran. I appreciate you coming on, Mike. I mean, I know that there's probably people in the audience that are like, you know, people listen to Software Radio and they like to hear like door kicker stories and that type of thing.
They want to hear about the F-14s dropping bombs on bad guys.
Yeah. So this isn't necessarily the sexiest story, but it's important in that, you know, such a huge portion of the audience is former military. Yep. And then a really big portion of those guys are 40 plus in this high risk category, probably should get checked for prostate cancer. And I think if they happen to be listening, it's an important message.
And here I am, supposedly a military journalist, and I haven't heard of the CHOICE program. So, I mean, I think it's really good that we get the word out about this.
Yeah. So it's vetsprostate.org. Appreciate coming on, Mike. And anything else you want to get out there before we wrap this up?
No, I want to thank you guys for the opportunity to spread the word. And, you know, you don't hear it enough, but thanks for your service. And thanks for continuing to get educate guys, both on the door kicker stories and bomb dropping stories, but also on, you know, it's good entertainment. We always need that little bit of a break in the day, right, to feed our egos. But the other part is that you know, these are some very important issues that we're all facing, and that, you know, we as a country need to be taking care of our veterans. I mean, we've been forced into this longest war in history. People are forgetting about it. You don't see the stories about what's going on in Afghanistan anymore. Yeah. It's kind of old news. It shouldn't be. It should be current news, and there should be a headline every day about it. But These are issues that are going to plague us for a long time. And, you know, I really appreciate you guys taking the time. You don't have to do this radio show. And I really appreciate your efforts. And let me know how else we can help you, you know, to get the word out and spread the word that, you know, these are big issues, and we just need to make people aware.
Yeah, no, thank you, Mike. And, you know, I think you're spot on that, like socially or culturally, we haven't really started to feel the full impacts and the full repercussions of this war quite yet. And, you know, as more and more guys come home, more and more guys retire from the service, we're going to start to see it. So, I mean, it's a good thing that, you know, VA exists, although it has some flaws. I mean, it's much better than nothing. It's much better than the way veterans in a lot of other countries are treated.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's part of it. This isn't, I don't ever want to be accused of bashing the VA. That's not the deal. It's, in my view, is that we all have to take a strain. We all have to be involved and we have to be engaged to make it a better organization. Mm-hmm. And it is, like you said, it's what we have. And so let's make it the best organization that we can. And I think that if an organization can't accept a little bit of criticism and constructive criticism, then we've got bigger problems. But I do believe that the VA is open to listen to ideas and to address some of these issues. And so this is just, we got to stay on top of it. And it's going to take us guys that are involved in it to keep pushing. And then I really appreciate the voice and appreciate the access to getting the word out.
You know, what was interesting about that interview was, as you mentioned, that Bernie Sanders and John McCain were advocates of the choice program. Mm-hmm. So last episode with Alex, we were talking about how the VA on some level is socialism. And
I mean, it's a government provided healthcare program.
So isn't it kind of interesting that this guy who advocates for socialism, or as he calls it, democratic socialism, is pretty much admitting that sometimes the free market has a better solution than a socialist program? Because that's what this is.
You're talking about Bernie?
Yeah, you're jumping into the free market and leaving the socialist program that you're in to be with the rest of the public and, you know, find other options available.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that somebody who's a committed socialist, that they would want as many people as possible inside government-run programs, right?
Yeah, that's why it was interesting to me.
I'm glad that Bernie and McCain both worked on that. Stuff like that should probably happen more often.
But yeah, to me, it just sounds like a more, it sounds like a more conservative idea traditionally.
I mean, I don't know that, I guess it leverages the free market, but I mean, I don't know. I don't really care if it's conservative or liberal. It makes zero difference to me personally.
Yeah. And it makes sense to sign up because of the main point that he made was that whether you sign up or not, they're getting this money. They're getting it allocated to them.
The American contribution to political philosophy is realism.
Yeah.
I'm a realist. I mean, if it works, it works.
I agree.
I'm fine with it.
As I said, we had a really good email here. So getting into that, this was sent, by the way. People always tweet me and stuff, where do I send emails? Sofrep.radio@sofrep.com. Keep them concise. We get to what we can here. But I thought this was a really good one. Hello, Ian and Jack. First off, I want to start by saying that I absolutely love your show. Started listening to it back in January of 2018 and have been hooked on ever since. As someone who loves reading about spec ops, special forces units from around the world, this podcast has been a godsend. Also, shout out to you, Ian, for solo hosting the shows while Jack was away. especially love the episode with Pat McNamara and Sean the Butcher about metal and heavy metal. As a huge metal fan myself, I absolutely loved it. Thank you very much. I just recently moved to the U.S. for grad school, and SofRep keeps me entertained when I have nothing to do and also while working out. So thank you once again. You know, it's funny. I hear that a lot, people working out. I couldn't work out to a podcast.
No,
and I listen to plenty of podcasts. I need music or I don't know. People talking wouldn't do it for me, but just saying it. If you're working out while listening to us, I don't know how this is motivational, but
yeah, you guys are hardcore. You get to listen to my velvety voice.
Yeah, like Alex does, apparently.
Really?
Alex Holmes said that he's worked out to the
podcast. No, I can't. I always listen to music.
Yeah. So anyway, he says, now on to the Indian Special Forces. I know that India and the U.S. have had a lot of cross-training between their special forces. And since Jack has served in SF, I was wondering whether he has any experience with the Army Para-SF or the Navy MARCOS, or what the general perception of Indian SF is in the U.S. Spec Ops community. Once again, guys, keep up the good work, and thanks for reading this. Regards, and that's from Tushar Nayar.
It's a very, very interesting subject to me personally. I don't have any actual experience working with Indian special operations units. There's a handful of different ones. Some are military. They also have paramilitary components that work for like their intelligence services, the Intelligence Bureau, and the Research and Analysis Wing, RAW. They have their paramilitary units. They sometimes do cross-border operations as well. It's a very, very interesting history. I find India to be a very interesting country. One of my dreams, I always wanted to go and do like some sort of embed with Indian special operations, because that's just something like nobody else is doing. No one else is really, like, as far as a journalism is concerned in the United States, I've never seen anyone do that. And I think that just the politics and the cultural dynamics are so interesting over there. As far as like a general impression of Indian special operations amongst our guys, I don't know that there is a general impression, because I don't think we work together closely with them enough. I could be wrong. I've just never really heard it come up in conversation. But for what it's worth, my point of view is I think we should develop those relationships with India much, much closer. I think India should be our best friend, because this is a country of, you know, like a billion people. They are a democracy. They're it's a flawed democracy. They have problems there, but yeah, they
still have the untouchable quiet.
They have all kinds of, there's all kinds of poverty. I mean, everything, but they are working towards something. They're building something. They're becoming,
they're not China.
Also, they are not the communist country of China. China, which is creating this like sci-fi dystopia, this Orwellian construct to quote unquote harmonize a population. I mean, China is a bad actor. Their government is a bad actor. I have no problem with Chinese people or Chinese traditional culture. I don't have any issue with that.
I think some of the biggest critics of China, at least here in the U.S., are of Chinese descent.
Yeah, of course, because they've had to live with it.
Gordon Chang, who's no longer allowed in the country, is extremely critical of China.
Yes. So I think we, for that reason, amongst others, we should be good friends with India. And I would, again, for what it's worth, and my point of view is that we should develop relationships with the Indian military and with the Indian intelligence services to have a very close relationship, ideally, sort of like what we have with some of our Five Eyes partners, for example. What is probably preventing that to some extent, or what makes that problematic, is that country next door, Pakistan, a constant thorn in our side. And the Indians and the Pakistani intelligence services have no love lost for one another, of course. And that all of that plays into Afghanistan and America's role in Afghanistan, and our fears of the Pakistani government destabilizing when they have nuclear weapons. So very complicated relationship there. If you're interested in going on our website on NewsRep and clicking around a little bit, there is a series of articles I did about the history of Indian intelligence services. And I read probably like five or six different books and memoirs written by retired Indian intelligence professionals. Again, it's just a fascinating history, and all the games that got played, it plays into the history of Pakistan, Bangladesh, separatist movements in Sikkim, all kind of very, very interesting, lots of intrigue, dealing with Sikh separatist movements in the 1980s. Mm. I mean, just all sorts of stuff that people wouldn't think of, and very fascinating intelligence operations. So you can go take a look for that if you'd like.
Yeah, appreciate the email. And I mean, if anybody happens to be listening that is former Indian special operations, we'd love to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Tweet us. Feel free to reach out. I mean, I think our listeners prefer to hear it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, than to listen to my opinions based on research.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it would be awesome to have someone like that on.
And I mean, we've had a pretty big international presence in terms of the guests.
Oh, for sure.
No one from India. So. Yeah. We'd love to have that happen. I mentioned that we have a story up at NewsRep about supposed new evidence about Malaysian Airlines flight MH17, but just like everybody here, I'm critical of anything that comes out of Russia. So this is from Moscow, Russia. By the way, the article, it's short. If you want to read it, is on NewsRep by Stavros. The Russian government submits new evidence regarding Malaysia Airlines flight MH17. And since it's short, I'll read the whole thing. Moscow, Russia. The Russian government has accused the Ukrainian security forces of being the perpetrators behind the downing of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17. On July 2014, Malaysia Airlines flight MH17 from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur was shot down by a missile in Ukrainian airspace. All 298 passengers died. The majority were Dutch citizens, but other nationalities were also on the casualty list. Immediately, suspicions fell upon Russia and the Russian-backed rebels of the Donetsk People's Republic, who both denied any knowledge. However, the chief Dutch investigator at first said that the missile was fired by a Russian military unit in the proximity of Kursk, which is very close to the Russo-Ukrainian border. Further evidence, however, indicated that missile was fired from eastern Ukraine. In response, the European Union imposed economic sanctions on Russia. Last May, Australia and the Netherlands directly named the Russian government as responsible. But now the Russian government has released new evidence that supports the contrary. The country's defense ministry has published the missile's serial number. The number indicates that the BUK missile responsible for the tragedy was shipped to Ukraine before the collapse of the Soviet Union. The Russian spokesperson stated that the missile was never returned to Russia. The missile with the serial number 886-847379, intended for the BUK missile system December 29, 1986, was sent by rail transport to military unit number 20152, said Nikolai Parshin, a Russian military spokesperson. After the breakup of the Soviet Union, the missile was not brought onto Russian soil and was incorporated into the Ukrainian armed forces, added Parshin. Following the disaster, investigators from Australia, Belgium, and the Netherlands, Malaysia, and Ukraine formed a joint investigation team after the missile's origin had been identified. The JIT requested further information about its origin from the Russian Defense Ministry. JIT said that they could study the new evidence and include it in their report. The JIT will carefully study the information brought out by the Russian Federation as soon as the documents are made available, they said in a statement. As a caveat, the JIT also highlighted that previous information furnished by the Russian authorities were incorrect and misleading. The Russian government also called video footage that shows the BUK missile entering rebel-held territory in East Ukraine fake. This was based on the light conditions in the video. From Kiev's side, the Ukrainian president, Petro Poroshenko, refused to sign the extension of a friendship agreement with Moscow. I mean, I don't know if this tells us anything more about this current Malaysian flight. I was also surprised that the missile was from that long ago, from, you know, basically when I was born, for a more recent news story.
Yeah, I don't really buy it. I mean, unfortunately, we're probably never going to find out the true story of what happened there.
So if you want to check that out, it's by Stavros, up now on thenewsrep.com.
That was at the point where it's like, don't think I'm flying Malaysian Airlines anytime soon.
Because I remember a few stories within each other. Last thing I want to mention, as well, as I saw earlier today, Mike Pence gave a speech at the Korean War Veterans Memorial Museum for a flag presentation. I was trying to find out the significance of it, if there was some type of anniversary or anything like that, and there wasn't really anything. I think it was just a flag presentation there, and he spoke.
The Forgotten War?
Yeah, very true. So, if you want to watch that, I know that's available on several outlets if you want to see his speech. Good having Mike on. As I said, it's kind of a departure from what we usually speak about, but I think it's
important.
If more vets are signing up for the choice program because of us reporting on this, then that's a good thing.
You hear people complaining about VA all the time. They're not getting the treatment they want. I mean, this might be an avenue to fix the quandaries of our times.
Yeah, agreed, man. All right, well, with that, be sure to check out Crate Club. The exclusive collaboration watch we did with NFW Watches is one of the next big items coming soon in the premium crate. We have different tiers of membership depending on how prepared you want to be, and gift options are available as well. Scott Whitner from the Loadout Room and the guys are currently working on bringing you 100% custom products in 2019, everything from sunglass cases to EDC bags and other manly products. It's a club for men, by men. You can check that all out at crateclub.us. Once again, that's crateclub.us. If you're a dog owner, check this out. You're going to love this. We've just partnered with Kuna. They have a team of trained canine handlers picking out a box for your dog every month, of healthy treats and training aids. It's custom built for your dog's size and age as well. The products are U.S. sourced, all natural, and they not only promote a healthy diet, but also promote being active with your dog. So whether we're talking a pit bull or a chihuahua, this is just what you're looking for. You can see all of that at kuna.dog. That's CUNA.DOG, kuna.dog. And as a reminder for those listening, for a limited time, you can receive a 50% discounted membership to the Spec Ops channel. That's our channel that offers the most exclusive shows, documentaries, and interviews covering the most exciting military content today. The Spec Ops channel premiere show Training Cell follows former Special Operations Forces as they participate in the most advanced training in the country. Everything from shooting schools, defensive driving, jungle and winter warfare, climbing, and much more. And you can watch all of this content by subscribing to the Spec Ops channel. That's at specopschannel.com. And take advantage of a limited time offer of 50% off your membership. That's only $4.99 a month. Check out the Spec Ops channel app that Chris developed. And I got some emails and tweets about that the SOFREP radio section of the SOFREP app is not available in the NewsRep app. I believe that Chris is working on a separate SOFREP radio app, so be on the lookout for that. And that's really it. The next guest that we have on is, I'm trying to remember how to pronounce Mark's last name behind you, but Mark was a guy that I know you wanted me to reach out to, Jack. I'm trying to, do you know how to say his last name? Mark G, he's the guy I reached out to on Twitter.
Looks like Giaconia.
You know who I'm talking about, though?
Yeah, he's a Special Forces dude who wrote a book about, I mean, he had an interesting career throughout the 90s, you know. I think he's going to have a lot of interesting stuff to talk about.
Yeah, so he'll be the next guy on. We have a lot of big guests on the horizon that I can't announce yet, but
yeah,
you guys are going to be excited for that type of stuff. Anything else? I mean, as always, follow us on SOFREP Radio, at SOFREP Radio, on Twitter, on Instagram. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Anything from you, man?
No, I think that's it. No, nothing to talk about today.
Well, we talked about the Bagram Babe. That was a lot of what was worth talking about today.
Don't get me started again.
I think the only other thing, as I mentioned before, of newsworthy stuff, when I saw that John Jones is going to fight again, I was like, that would be a cool Jim West show to talk about. I think regardless of like that guy's many troubles, I think he's the best fighter out there. I think Jim would probably say he's up there.
Did you see the news about Cody Wilson?
No. What about him?
He has supposedly fled to Taiwan because there's like a warrant out for his arrest.
Holy shit, for what?
Sex with a minor.
Jeez.
Yep. He paid, allegedly paid $500 to have sex with a 16-year-old girl in a hotel room. And so Cody Wilson is the cat who's behind like the 3D printing a gun.
So he's a guy that we wanted on the show at one point.
We contacted
right?
him and we scheduled him to do a show to talk about 3D printing guns.
Yeah.
And he flaked out on us. He just like disappeared.
Yeah. Yep.
And so we're like, okay, what the fuck ever, moving on. And then I saw the news yesterday that, wanted by U.S. Marshals. Yeah. And I saw that news and I was like, thank the fuck Christ we didn't have this guy on the podcast.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's not our fault.
No, of course, it's not our fault that this guy's a criminal. But I'm just glad that we didn't give this dude a platform.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, thanks for checking this out. As always, I can't stress it enough. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That stuff really helps us out, and we appreciate all the feedback. If you want to follow Jack on Twitter, it's at Jack Murphy RGR. On Instagram, at Jack McMurph. I'm on Twitter, at Ian Scott.
Follow me for woke tweets.
You've been listening to SOFREP Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at SOFREP Radio.